The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
That's very disturbing, to say the least, when we have, again, a state superintendent who does not want to have anything to do with diversity, equity, inclusion. DEI is in deity. Diversity, equity, inclusion is God.
Thank you for your debate.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
What? What did I just hear? You know, really? DEI, you know, diversity, equity, inclusion is God. I've said this, right? I've been saying this. This is a modern day religion. This is the altar that people are worshiping at. I saw a photo somebody had put up. It was of a Hindu goddess back in 2015. I don't know why this person had it on their website today, but it was an image of this Hindu goddess Kali. And it was projected back in 2015 on the Empire State Building in New York City. I don't know if you remember. Very disturbing image. Just like the statue of the goddess that was placed on top of that court building in Manhattan. You remember that one? The one with the spaghetti arms and braided hair turned into horns with a collar that imitated the, you know, late Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg's collar that she wore over, you know, the judge's robes. What are we seeing? I mean, there was a quote that was attributed to G.K. Chesterton, and I think it's such a classic quote. It's when a man stops believing in God, he doesn't believe in nothing. He believes in anything, right? And if you're if you're a big fan of Chesterton, don't cringe. I know he actually never said that, at least in that way. But the essence of the quote is true, right? When man stops believing in God, he doesn't, you know, then believe in nothing. He believes in everything. So there's a bill in Oklahoma that would allow parents to review the state's curriculum for students through a database. And opposition to that bill came from a state representative named Regina Goodwin. And you just heard that clip. And I'll quote the whole clip. She says, "That's very disturbing, to say the least, when we have, again, a state superintendent who does not want to have anything to do with diversity, equity, and inclusion. DEI is a deity. Diversity, equity, and inclusion is God." End of quote. So I don't know about you. If my representative said that, I'd be out campaigning tomorrow to get him or her voted out of office. I mean, that's crazy. That's why you need to be well-formed. You need to understand who you're putting into office. But look, what's happening in our society today is that as you move further and further away from God, when you move away from the one source of truth, which is God, right? We were just talking about truth. We're willing to accept other things as God. And that is where we are today, unfortunately. When an ideology like DEI becomes a deity and a God, I don't think it becomes any clearer. It's no longer hidden. It's right in your face. So, you know, it makes our living together as a country, I think, also a lot more difficult. Like we had that conversation with Terry Mattingly. We see this rift, this divide increasing. So when we don't have a common ground of understanding, division rises up a lot more easily. And I'm joined today by Congressman Dan Lipinski. He had represented the 3rd Congressional District, Illinois. And this is a great guy. I mean, I love his story, but I hate his story. He lost his primary challenge in 2020 because he stood up for life. He stood up for a truth, and he was primaried. It was terrible what happened to him. He recently gave a talk at that post-truth conference in Washington that was sponsored by Franciscan University, where you're talking about, EWTN, and he joins us today. And Congressman, great to have you back. Thank you for making time for us today.
Always good to be with you, Drew.
Thank you so much. You know, I know you said in your talk that the problem for our democracy is that a sectarian view of politics is a zero-sum game, focusing on destroying the other, that there's no real debate, there's no attempt at negotiation, no compromise, because we just can't do any of those things with the devil. And that was a quote from you. Can a country stand very long with this kind of attitude? And where do you see us? Maybe start there. I mean, I almost feel like this divide is broadening, it's widening. But give me your take and how much longer we can tolerate this division.
Well, I unfortunately don't believe that our country can survive. At least our republic cannot survive for too long with such a divide. And partisanship for many people has become a fundamentalist pseudo-religion. Yeah. And I think some of this is, I think as you were talking about earlier, some of it is that people are losing a true faith, but they're searching for something else because people are always going to be doing that. And where some people are finding it now is in their political partisanship, and they're accepting, they feel that they have to choose one of these two. And once they choose which of these two tribes, as a lot of people call them, but I think they're more like sects because it's sectarian. Once they choose those, then they feel like they have to adopt every single policy position, but not only policy position, it includes even views of the human person and what a human person is. I mean, it is becoming, I mean, I would never imagine partisanship could become that way. I mean, I always saw it as a useful tool. It was an instrument for if you're running for office to help you get elected, help people make decisions when they're voting, to help organize within a government people who were like-minded. But now it's become, as I said, a fundamentalist pseudo-religion for so many people.
Yeah. My guest today, Congressman Dan Lipinski. Congressman, let's take a couple calls. I mean, there's so much to dive into here and talk about. I'll invite you, if you want to join us as well, to pull up a chair. The number here, 888-914-9149. You can join the conversation with Congressman Dan Lipinski. Kathy's in Chicago, Congressman, and she's got a comment she wants to make, and you can respond. Hi, Kathy.
Oh, yeah. Hi, Drew. Thanks for having me on. I just want to say that I think it's getting out of control with the DEI coordinators. I don't know if you know this, but Stanford University has a DEI coordinator, and she's making $202,000 a year. So it's a very lucrative thing, and more universities are hiring DEI coordinators. You can go and look at the job descriptions, and they're making six figures. I mean, it's really attracting a lot of people to become more militant that you have to have these DEI coordinators on staff at these universities.
Yeah, well, Kathy, thank you for sharing that with us. And Congressman, we can talk about it. We see it in the areas of higher academia clearly, and that always trickles down. And you're seeing it also in the arena of politics. Your thoughts for Kathy and why something like DEI is getting such traction? I can understand on a very base level, but when you look at what it really represents, I just don't understand how people want to embrace it.
Well, Kathy is exactly right here, and unfortunately, it's not just in higher ed; it's high schools. Our high school here that where I live, I mean, they are also hiring DEI coordinators or whatever they're calling them. Unfortunately, I think there's a everyone wants inclusion. Unfortunately, what we get when we have these fundamentalist pseudo religions is it's not about inclusion; it's about exclusion. So inclusion is good, but unfortunately, DEI is not really so much about inclusion. It's about it is excluding people, putting some above others, and it is providing a lot of lucrative jobs for some people. And I think in some ways it's about power, and it's being used for purposes of power, not really for what it is, the supposed inclusion that it's supposed to be about. It's people are searching, seeking power in the power to put their ideas above others.
Hey, Maggie, you were talking a little bit about Jordan Peterson earlier. You ought to share what he had to say about DEI.
He wrote a impactful article for the National Post. It's titled, "Why I Am No Longer a Tenured tenured professor at the University of Toronto, DEI needs to die. He says the appalling ideology of diversity, inclusion, and equity is demolishing our education and business. I think if you search him on YouTube, you can find him reading this article as well.
Wow, that's fascinating. Yeah, I mean, yeah, take a look at other nations, other organizations that have embraced this. The end is not good. Before we go back to phones, let me just pick up on our conversation here, because we're talking about how long our country can stand with this and the direction that we're going. You also pointed out that, and I thought this was a really important point, that there's this tendency right now towards a political messianism, if you will. When we stop believing in God, and we're seeing that, I mean, there's been total rejection of God in our country, and you see the craziness that has resulted from that. I do believe there is this tendency right now to political messianism. Explain what you meant by that to those who didn't get a chance to read what you wrote, and let's unpack that.
Well, the idea that, first of all, fusing our partisanship with our faith, I think, leads to this political messianism, because we then start to see political victories as divine imperatives.
Yeah.
That, you know, well, we must win. My side must win, because we are on the side of good. We are fighting evil, and look, there are times where we are good fighting evil, but if we allow, if we give that to some other organization, some political organization, a political party, first of all, we're letting someone else make the decision on what those things are. And as Catholics, they may not fit with what we believe as a Catholic. But once you see things to be, you know, this is an existential battle, you start to believe that legal, institutional, and even moral constraints can be ignored because the stakes are so high. And that should not ever be what our politics are about. And we certainly should not be giving this to a political party to make these decisions for us.
Yeah, no kidding. Tom is listening in Glendora, California. Tom, hi. You're on the air with Congressman Lipinski. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Drew. It's an honor to be on this great show. Thanks. Congressman, I can't tell you how much I admire you. You're saying the message, the only way to save the country, I'll put it very briefly and then expound a bit if I have time. The GOP must become the advocate of G-O-D. I'm not saying we force people to have religion, but when you look at the rampant evil that is eating this country up as we speak, the pro-abortion movement, the hate, the woke culture, the abuse of little children by sexualizing them in kindergarten, the sex change mutilations, if we don't stop this, we are dead. So perhaps, and you're a great advocate of what I'm preaching as well, mention to people, even that are atheists or agnostics, a good life, a happy life, whether you believe in God or not, inextricably emanates from following the Ten Commandments. And the Word of God is the only ultimate immutable truth. And we were founded on that, as horrible as we strayed during slavery to our dear black brothers and sisters. But we've made amends. We've asked for repentance and forgiveness. We've got to return to God right now and do that again, or this best country will be lost.
Tom, thank you. Thanks for calling. Thanks for your passion. Dan, Congressman Lipinski, I'll let you respond.
Well, I'm speaking this weekend at Benedictine College at their Transforming Culture Symposium. And what I'm talking about there is really what my book, which I've started now, is going to center on, is what we need in this country is a renewal of civic patriotism, which is a devotion to the principles of our Declaration of Independence and our Constitution. And I believe that the best foundation for these principles is Catholic social teaching.
Yeah.
And so we need more than anything, what we as Catholics need to do is evangelize the culture. Politics is important, and don't get me wrong, I spent 16 years in Congress. I'm still not completely disconnected from politics. It's important. It's important who we elect president. It's important to who we elect to Congress, to all of these offices. That is important. But we should not believe that the government is going to fix all of the problems in our country. What we need to do as Catholics is look at ourselves, and we need to evangelize the culture. And, you know, we have to look at where we have failed, and we need to pray and listen to God in what he is directing us to do. And it's not just about politics. I think it's even more about transforming the culture, because in a democracy, if we're going to continue to have the democracy, we need people, we need Americans to understand the truth, be dedicated to the truth, and instill that into our government and into our laws. And I think we have failed in some ways in that.
My guest, Congressman Dan Lipinski, if you want to get in, I have him for a few more minutes. The number is 888-914-9149. Feel free to share your view or ask your question. Congressman, somebody was just asking me, you're going to be speaking at Benedictine College. Is that the one in Illinois or Kansas?
In Kansas.
All right. So check them out if you're in the area there. That would be great. You know, our founding fathers, they had said that, you know, this republic of ours, this democratic republic, would only be successful if it was based on a virtuous people. And I sometimes wonder if we have lost that virtue, you know, that they said is necessary right now. And I think you're right. When we distort truth, when we reject God, I think unless we get back to those fundamental principles, we got a rough road ahead. But so often, you know, a pendulum swings so far one direction, then eventually comes back. You know, we saw the bad fruit of so many things that have gone before us. I think we're going to see even more of that. You know, contraception left to abortion. We see the damage that happens with post-abortive women, the redefinition of marriage. We're going to see where that's leading to polygamy and to polyamory and to a lot of other things. Eventually, this stuff kind of feeds on itself and exposes itself. How much longer can we persist, and how do we get those principles back to the fore so that we are a virtuous people and that this republic has a good foundation to stand on?
Well, it's not going to be easy, and it's not going to be done overnight. Unfortunately, I think we all get really get used to having things move very quickly. We want them to move quickly. It's just going to take, as I said, we need to do the hard work of evangelization. And it's not only it's both inside our church, but it's, you know, in general, in our whole country, in our societies. And we start, we certainly need to start locally in our communities, and we see fewer and fewer people being involved in their communities, and I think that's a major problem. But I also want to make sure before my time runs out here, I want to make the point that I really think that it is dangerous that there are many very well-meaning, very smart, good, faithful Catholics who are giving up on our country. And they think that our country from the founding was doomed to lead to all these problems that we see in our society now. And I don't believe that is true. I think what we were founded on, and there's a good book that came out late last year, The Classical and Christian Origin of American Politics, that really challenges what I think a lot of us were taught. I certainly was back in the 70s and 80s, that the founders of this country were deists. and what they put into our founding documents, declaration, especially what was deism. And I don't think that is really true. And as I said, you can certainly, all of that, I believe, is supported. Everything in our declaration, the self-evident truths that are asserted in the declaration is supported by Catholic social teaching. And we need to get out there and tell people that, explain that to people. And that is how we're going to change this country.
Well, I'm grateful for you. I hope you run again. I've said that to you before, because we need well-formed men and women in office. I'm grateful for your message. Let's grab another quick call before we run out of time in this segment. Linda is in Washington, D.C. Linda, good afternoon. You're on the air with Congressman Lipinski.
Thank you. I just have one thing to say. No God, no traditional family. I'll repeat it. No traditional family, no country. And this is where we are today. And I tell this to everybody I can who will listen. And most people agree with me.
Well, I think you're right. You lose God, you lose family, you lose the country. That's for sure. You know, today the truth is obscured, it's denied, it's corrupted in the interest of these ideologies that are, you know, infecting our schools, coming out of our media. This dictatorship of relativism, I often quote Benedict on. Pope Benedict, clearly we're seeing that evident today. But I have hope for the future. You know, there's men like you, Congressman, and so many others. You know, we have to do our part, and really, God is the answer to it all. Let me give you final thoughts. I have about a moment or two left for you.
Well, I think that we have to have hope. I'm not an optimist, but as a Catholic Christian, I have to have hope, and I always look to Saint John Paul II, the witness to hope, and all that he went through, and the fact that he could have true hope. And he's always a inspiration to me. And again, we all need to do our part. I'm doing some teaching now at the University of Dallas. I'm the Pope Leo the 13th fellow of social thought at University of Dallas. So I'm teaching there. I'm also a fellow at the Hoover Institution, which is, you know, a place that I hope to bring more focus on religion.
Good for you.
To the Hoover Institution, I think that's something that is missing there. But I think there's a real movement to understanding through all segments of society how important faith in God is for our country.
Amen to that, Congressman. Thank you. Thanks for your message. Thanks for your service, and continue to keep up the good work. We'll talk again soon. Okay.
Thank you.
You got it. It's Congressman Dan Lipinski. Say a prayer for him. I'm glad he's using his talents to teach and to form. It's important. You talked about John Paul II. Just a final thought on him. John Paul II taught that truth does not change. And he wrote an encyclical called Veritatis Splendor. And the splendor of truth, he says, shines forth in all the works of the Creator, that it enlightens man's intelligence, that it shapes his freedom, that it leads him to know and to love the Lord. And I could not agree with him more. Today, we live in a culture where truth is obscured. And the ideology, the wokeism, and all these other anti-life and all these relativistic philosophies seem to be taking over. Our response as Catholics, as Christians, as citizens of this great country, should be doing a couple things. You know, the tides of censorship and intimidation in this era we are in require courage and fortitude. Pray for that. You know, stand up to the intolerance and the censorship by speaking truth to it, right? That's how you make a difference. And then secondly, remember that science and reason, they're on the side of objective truth. A man is a man and a woman is a woman, right? Science is science. You often hear that. Science and reason are on the side of objective truth. It's a child in the womb. Okay, third, we have to build alliances and friendships and collaborations across all walks of life and fields amongst those who see the same crisis. We're not alone out there. We are not alone. There's a lot of people who understand this and support them, pray for them. And then my final thought here, and we'll take a quick break. We live in challenging times, but you were chosen. You were chosen to live at this particular moment in time. God chose you. I think about that a lot. Yeah, are we in a post-truth society? We certainly are. I shouldn't say totally, because people like you and me believe in truth. We try to advocate it and proclaim it. And you shouldn't allow yourself to despair. You shouldn't allow yourself to be discouraged. You hear a conversation like this, you're thinking, oh my gosh, what's going to happen? As Catholics, the good news will prevail. Jesus Christ is the answer. Just as the church has always done in difficult times that have gone before us, you and I, we've got to continue to live and to preach and to spread the truth of Jesus Christ anytime that we possibly can. You know, the gospel is very clear. You shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free, right? Amen to that? Amen. Let me take a short break. When we come back, we will talk more. In fact, when we come back, this might be an interesting follow-up to what we were just talking about as well. There's an interesting study that's out that takes a look at the gap between liberals and conservatives, and you'll be surprised at where our young are today. I'll share that when I return.
Wish you could hit rewind on that convo? Listen to the podcast on relevantradio.com or anywhere podcasts can be found.
Hey, looking for a new job? How about one that offers opportunities for spiritual, social, and charitable growth? Our sponsor, Catholic Order of Foresters, is hiring new agents today. Visit relevantradio.com/forester. An Illinois Life Insurance Society, not available in all states.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, well, our conversation continues. It's good to be here with you. Coming up in just a moment or two, Professor Mark Rignaris is going to be stopping by. I was just talking to Maggie during the break about the confluence of things that our show is produced almost the day off. Occasionally we might say, oh, we should talk about so-and-so and book that in advance. But we're pretty much in the now, current event-driven radio broadcast, so whatever's the news happens. And from Congressman Lipinski, we heard, to the professor of journalism, Terry Mattingly, it's kind of strange, the confluence of these events. I saw another story which really kind of fits very well into this conversation. There's a gap between conservative and liberals, and I think you'll find this study interesting. I want to share part of it with you, but you know, the messaging that we're hearing, and this has been what we've been talking a lot about today, truth, the messaging of the liberal left. If you're on the left, you know, their message is you can be whatever you want to be. You can be whoever you want to be. No one is going to question your judgment. As I said earlier, if I wanted to be a 5'2" Chinese woman, and I really believe that, you would have to accept that as truth, even though I'm 6'3", it's an Italian descent American male, right? You can be whatever you want to be. You know, they have to accept you as who you are. Drew Barrymore, my producer Tom was telling me that Drew Barrymore was talking to a man who thinks that he's a woman, and she got down on her knees in front of him and began to grovel on the floor to show her acceptance. I didn't see this, so this is like secondhand, thirdhand information to you, but he saw it, and he says, I couldn't believe what she was doing. You think with a message like that, you know, when you see something like that, it should really make you question, right? But that's not the case. Again, there's this almost spirit of worship towards people who really, I think, need love and direction. There was a Pew Research Center poll that was done in 2020, and it indicated that white liberals suffer more from mental illness when you compare them to conservatives. And I found this study striking. They found that if you're conservative, you're going to be far less likely to be diagnosed with mental health issues than your liberal counterparts. I'm not a psychiatrist. I wonder why that is. You know, for young white liberal women, I'm sorry, they got it worse. 56% of these women had mental health diagnoses as compared with 27% of women who are conservative. Again, why do you think that is? You know, what's behind that? I have one solution. Just speaking in terms of what we just discussed, I think when you lose God, when you reject God, when you take him out of your life and out of the country, you fill him with everything else. And some of these ideologies, when you separate yourself from God, you know, they lead you down a path that's just not healthy. And that's why we see this anxiety, these mental health diagnoses that are coming in. And it's not across the board. The numbers are 56% of these women had mental health diagnoses compared to 27% of conservatives. That's just one hypothesis that I'm throwing forward. I don't know what yours are. But here's the other thing. This isn't just something that's going on recently. You might say, Drew, that's just one study. You know, you can get whatever you want out of that data. The American Affairs Journal reports that this well-being gap, this mental health gap, this isn't new. It's not happening because of social media today. It's not happening just recently. It's been going on for 50 years. I'm going to share one quick quote, and we can talk about it. Quote, the gap manifests clearly across all age groups and is present as far back as the polling goes, the journal says here. And again, the quote continues. In the general social survey, for instance, there's been a consistent 10% point gap between the share of conservatives versus liberals who report being very happy in virtually every iteration since 1972. So on top of that, the author notes this. It says conservatives do not just report higher levels of happiness. They also report higher levels of meaning in their lives. And I'm not an apologist here for conservatism or anything else. I just want to say, well, what is driving this? Right? What is driving this? What's missing on the liberal side of the equation that's creating this problem for them? I'm joined by a professor of sociology at the University of Texas at Austin. His name is Dr. Mark Rignaris. He's the author of about 30 published articles and book chapters. His research is in the area of sexual behavior, family, and religion. I thought he'd be perfect to get a perspective on this. And Doctor, I'm grateful for your time. Welcome back.
Thanks, Drew. Always good to talk to you.
So what's your thought? I mean, I was just stream of conscience. I was thinking as I was going through those quotes and reading that study, what is creating this gap and this crisis for liberals?
Right. Well, I don't think it's rocket science. And I don't even know if you need a sociologist. I think you already hit the nail on the head. It is about transcendence. It's about lacking meaning. And the author of the American Affairs piece, which is describing some studies about this, notes that conservatives make sense of and respond constructively to adverse states of affairs. In fact, I think he does a better job of explaining how it is that conservatives find meaning and happiness better than sort of like why is it completely missing or you know, really in trouble among progressives. Now, right. One of the things that's also happening in this is it's not strictly about religion, because right. religious or, you know, church-going liberals still display notably higher depression and meaninglessness compared to conservatives. So it's not that religion solves everything or that liberalism causes everything. But in general, you know, I think a lot of us can think about, you know, difficult things have happened to us, trials, etc. And sometimes we'll look back at it from 5-10 years later and think, I have no idea how I did that, right? And yet, you know, you had meaning, you had purpose, you had God, you had friends. And you weren't encouraged to make things worse than they already were.
Yeah, so true. My guest today, Dr. Mark Rignaris. If you want to sound off, you're more than welcome to join us. The number's 888-914-9149. You can get into that number, 888-914-9149. Time flies if we only have a little bit of time to share with him today. You bring up a good point. I was thinking, though, you know, the message we hear almost constantly from the media, you know, the government schools, so on, is that, you know, doing what you want to do, so long as it doesn't harm anyone else, it's far better and easier than, you know, being confined by your religion, following these man-made rules. That's what's going to make you happy. You know, so why aren't these people happy if they reject the conformity of religion, right? And these rules?
Yeah.
They seem to be miserable.
Yeah, and it's true. I can think of lots of my students, too. They sort of bristle against any sort of boundaries, and yet they're consistently among the most troubled and unhappy students that I have. And, you know, the author of the original article for this mulls over politics, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But as you note, this has been true since the General Social Service started collecting data in 1972, right? 51 years ago, we knew this was the case, and it hasn't gone away. They studied a little bit more closely. Was there sort of a Trump effect to this?
Yeah.
And I look at the data like, not really, because this, the sort of the particular trajectory of, especially among adolescents, right? That kicks in most poignantly starting in 2011 for liberal women. Then it starts 2012 for liberal men.
Yeah.
Then it starts in 2013 for conservative women and 2014 for conservative men. All of them are going up in terms of adolescence, in terms of depression. Okay, so it's not as if these things aren't happening to other people, but they're happening more to liberals than to conservatives. Now, you did say something about social media.
Mm-hmm.
I think that social media doesn't cause this, but boy, it's an efficient medium to add to our misery in some ways. And one of the things that, you know, I don't want to point blame, but mm-hmm. you know, that year 2011 when mm-hmm. this really started occurring to adolescents. You know, when did Instagram start? 2010. 2010, it takes a little bit of time, and all of a sudden we see some effect in 2011. I can't blame it on that. I'm reticent to make causal claims, but kind of having the imagery of what we want, what we thirst for, what we wish to be but don't feel like we are, staring at us hours a day, I don't think it helps.
Yeah. I've got to take a short break. When we come back, let's pick it up. We'll talk a little bit more, too. I only have a few moments on the other side. My guest today, Dr. Mark Regnerus. If you want to get in, the number's 888-914-9149. And we are taking a look at the well-being gap between conservatives and liberals. I found it telling. I was stunned by the length of time that this has been consistent. But we'll continue to explore this and more when I return. Stay with me.
We go there. The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Hey, looking for a new job? How about one that offers opportunities for spiritual, social, and charitable growth? Our sponsor, Catholic Order of Foresters, is hiring new agents today. Visit relevantradio.com/forester. An Illinois Life Insurance Society, not available in all states.
Weigh in now, 888-914-9149. You're listening to The Drew Mariani Show.
Taking a look at a really interesting study, the well-being gap between conservatives and liberals. If you're just joining me, it is a stunning find, at least from where I stand. The study found that if you're conservative, you're far less likely to be diagnosed with a mental health issue than your liberal counterpart. What drives that? What's behind it? I'm joined today by Dr. Mark Regnerus. He's a professor of sociology at the University of Texas at Austin, and it's good to have him back with us. Before we jump on the phones, I want to get to those calls. There was, this is to me a little bit wacky, but one author has a conjecture that genetic differences might be one of those factors involved here. I don't know how he can make that claim, but conservatives and liberals, it's more of a philosophical ideology, not genetics, but what do you make of that claim? Something to it?
Yeah, we've been tracking and, you know, chasing after genetics for a long time. It's good for lots of physical outcomes. It's less adept at measuring and capturing sort of mental and emotional health outcomes. So I think it was kind of throwing a bone to that line of inquiry. I really don't see it. I mean, it would also suggest that somehow political affiliations and political perspectives are genetically, as a matter of sort of inheritability. And I don't really think that's true.
All right, let's grab some calls. A lot of people want to talk with you, so I'll let you respond to Roy first. He's calling from Madison, Wisconsin. Hi, Roy.
Hello, Drew. Great show again, as usual. I wanted to ask your guest a question. I'm not sure if he's the right person to ask, but I will, because it always puzzles me. Yeah. It's my understanding that back in the late 60s, early 70s, is when the American Medical Association and all the medical doctors of our country changed the ruling that homosexuality had always been a mental illness before, and they tried to actually do things to them to change them, shock them out of it or whatever. But then after that, they said it's not a medical medical condition. It's just another choice. And I wanted to get, and you keep talking about 72. Sir, you bring up something in 1972 this happened. And I wanted to get your opinion on why. Number one, do you know, am I right? Did they change that? And ever since then, it's just a choice. It's not a medical bad condition. And I just wanted to get your opinion about that, if I could.
That's a great question. I talked about 1972 because that's the first year we started tracking the American political attitudes and behaviors through the General Social Survey. So that has nothing to do with the APA or the AMA. But you are right. In the late 60s, early 70s, they documented, they kind of reduced the idea that homosexuality is an inherently problematic mental condition. I am not a scholar of the sort of origins of this stuff, but I do know that when people are in pain, sometimes by their own behavior patterns, it doesn't do them any good to sort of say there's nothing wrong with you, right? And this extends, well past sexual dysfunctions into other kinds of dysfunctions. But so when we think, though, about like, oh, what are progressives pushing today? And certainly all manner of sexuality and gender identities, orientations, none of them are problematized. All of them are typically encouraged. And the author of this piece even says they're incentivized, right? So that they can actively foster depression, in part because, when we are not living in tune with our Creator's design for us, we're going to be unhappy. Those of us who already know that can we make it right by going to confession, right? And sort of working on our own sanctification with God's help. But if you're told there's absolutely nothing wrong with you, in fact, not only is there nothing wrong with you, it's other people that are the problem in your life. Boy, is that ever a recipe for, discouragement and depression. And then you think, well, how do I pull myself up out of my own bootstraps? Yeah. It's very difficult.
Yeah. Hey, Roy, thank you for the call. I'm glad you brought that
up.
You're right. I remember discussing this, I think, with Dr. Richard Fitzgibbons, who was a noted psychiatrist at one point in time. He said the DSM, that is the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual on Mental Disorders, back in 68, they had classified homosexuality as a sexual deviation. But in the 70s, there was this growing movement within the field of psychology to declassify that as a mental disorder. And they did do that. I don't know the exact year, but the removal of homosexuality from the DSM was pretty significant, and it has been gone ever since. So appreciate your call. Andrew's listening to us in Bettendorf, Iowa. Good to have you with us, Andrew. Good afternoon.
Hey, it's great to be here. Thank you. Something that we had to – I'm a social worker here in Iowa, and something we had to read in our bachelor's program was called The Conservative Heart. And I think where we get with this lesser diagnoses is that our book here talked about people who had jobs and employment and had meaning just had lesser mental health diagnoses in general. So what's interesting is, programs that
Is he still there? Oh, did we lose him? Feel free to call back. I'm sorry. I think your signal must have dropped. Doctor, did you pick that up? Do you want to respond?
He talks about diagnoses. And in the study that we're talking about, it's not just sort of self-reported depression. It's about, has a doctor ever told you and diagnosed you with a, you know, depressive effect, et cetera. And, you know, it's absolutely the case too. So it's not just what you think about yourself, am I struggling, et cetera, but you've been clinically, you know, told that you are, you have troubles, right? So, but he's right about sort of the way that employment can find meaning for us, but it's not enough here, right? Conservatism, and really we're talking about things that correlate with religiousness, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's the reduced level of social constraints that we have today is a key factor driving this pattern. You know, traditional forms of life, traditional social roles, when people undermine the structures around you, and they flip the kind of constraint to kind of not social control, but social support, right? I think of like Facebook is, you know, it's mostly about social support. It's not very good at social control, right? We endorse people, right? We endorse their decisions. But, you know, that leaves us basically hanging out to dry. Like, we're the creators of our own happiness, our own identity. Ah, man, that is a demanding, tough place to be.
It really is. Let's do this. We only have a couple minutes left. Let me sneak Bill in Boston on the phone with you. Let's do some Boston Mass. Bill, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Drew. Thank you very much for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I just want to ask you a question, you and the doctor. Where do you feel that if you allow or you that gay people, homosexual are sinful, and that if a woman wants to choose, a woman has, you want to disable a woman from having her choice, and everything is so, whatever is wrong with God or whatever is we speak is wrong, and you associate it with liberals. Okay. I mean, I don't understand that.
All right, but Bill, we'll respond to you.
The GOP, I don't understand that. Yeah. I mean, you did a study, you say, in 1972 to whenever, that you think that there's a mental problem with people that are
Well, Bill, first of all, I didn't do the study, and we only have about 2 minutes left, so I do want to have an opportunity to give the doctor a chance to respond to you. You can look up that study. Doctor, I'll let you go first. Feel free to respond to all these issues that Bill has just brought forward.
Sure. But basically, like, 1972 is when the University of Chicago's National Opinion Research Center started studying this stuff, asking Americans lots of different kinds of questions about lots of different things. And they've done it every year to 2 years since then for 50 years. And so the topic we're talking about is they've noticed the difference between political conservatives and political liberals on this topic, and that is on depression.
Right.
That's self-reported, right? But the study that you have mentioned, too, also goes into depth about sort of clinical diagnosis.
Doctor,
so it's really a reflection on sort of what are the things that are happening in conservatives' life.
Doctor, I got to leave it right here because your signal is really breaking up. My apologies, but my gratitude to you for your time today. Thank you so much for making time for us. That's Dr. Mark Rignaris. I hope you will check him out as well and his writing. Again, he's a professor of sociology at the University of Texas at Austin, and he'll be back with us again. Mark, thank you. Bill, thank you for your call. I am out of time for the day. I want to thank you for allowing me to be part of your afternoon. If you missed any of these conversations, Maggie has our podcast up about 30 minutes after we're off, maybe an hour after we're off. And we've had some great conversations this week. Feel free to download those podcasts, share them with others, or listen. Cale Clark is coming straight up. Stay tuned for him. Always an engaging conversation. Until our paths again cross, remember, God loves you. So do I. Have a great week.